Hello, this is Chris English with the first of the June editions of At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton Hove and further afield. All for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme, there'll be news on progress with the restoration of the iconic Salt Dean Lido. There'll be an interview with a young lady who last graced the Theatre Royal stage as Evita, but this time round will be starring in the musical Little Miss Sunshine that'll be on at the Theatre Royal from the 10th to the 15th of June. Plus, there'll be news about a plastic beach hut that appeared on Hove Beach recently to promote how we can, and of course should, care for our environment. And Chris Seymour will be bringing us news on the Rottingdean Music Festival. But let's start with news on the battle to restore the Salt Dean Lido. Or should that be Lido? A question that I put to the project's trustee, Derek Chester.
Well, it depends on who you are and where you live. I can tell you that the correct pronunciation is Lido, because the word comes from Lido di Venezia, a place in Italy. And it was a sandbar that was popular in the 1920s with the bright young things, the flappers. And when outdoor swimming and Lidos became popular in Britain, it was decided that they should be called Lido because it brought a bit of European chic borrowed from Italy. But if, like me, you grew up in Salt Dean, you say Lido, because that's what we always said, but it depends on who you ask.
Talking about the Salt Dean Lido or Lido, it's got water back in the pool. There's still some work going on, but it's about to reopen.
Yes, absolutely. I've just been over there and it is looking stunning. The pool is actually completely full now. It didn't take long to fill it this year. We had some maintenance work to do, and some of you've been past on the top of the number 14 or 27 bus, you would have seen there's lots of activity and plant machinery in there. But all the work's been done, things have been put right. We relined the pool as well because the epoxy resin needed updating. So that was all done by the people that built the pool 2 years ago. So it's a lovely Mediterranean blue. We need to put the grounds right. So we're preparing the lawn, etc. And most excitingly, the changing rooms are going to be completely different this year. If anyone's used them previously, they were very basic because we had grants that we used to recreate the swimming pool back in 2016 and 17, but we didn't quite have enough money for the changing room. So we have been fundraising and doing all sorts, but I've just been in there and they are stunning. They look like something from a health spa, actually. Very clean, bright, shiny, and I think people are going to be really thrilled when they come along this year.
What about the main building itself? Because that's everybody's image of Salt Dean Lido that they see from the coast road or from the buses.
Absolutely. It's been the most important part of the restoration project. We always called that phase two. So the pool was phase one, the big Art Deco or modernist building has always been phase two. So with the Heritage Lottery Fund application, we achieved the first phase of that 3 or 4 years ago. That gave us the development money so we could do the studies and look at the condition of the building, the failing reinforced concrete, what was wrong with it, doing all the chemical analysis, the engineering reports, structural reports, and we looked at the business plan, what would actually make money and make Salt Dean Lido sustainable. We put in our round two submission last year, but they said to us that they wanted to see, as well as all the other grants that we've been applying for, various wonderful trusts and organisations in the area, around the UK I should say, they wanted to see a level of commitment from the people of Brighton and Hove, as well as the supporters around the UK. So we did a crowdfunder for the Heritage Cafe. That took place last summer, and there was lots of activity and campaigning around that. And the Heritage Lottery Fund basically wanted to see that there was that genuine support there. If we hadn't made that target, to be honest, the Heritage Lottery Fund would have probably rightly said, well, why are we putting in several millions of pounds into this project if it's not really that well supported by the local community? But the public came up trumps, and we were absolutely overwhelmed with the level of support. It was clear that not only the local community and wider community in Brighton Hove, but supporters all over the UK and indeed the world want Salt Lake Lido to be restored. And we raised over £102,000 with that crowdfunder. It was fantastic. And on the back of that and all the other fundraising that we've been doing, the Heritage Lottery Fund have said that in principle, yes, they want the project to go ahead. So we are currently preparing final bits and pieces we need so that we can get permission to start. So the HLF will be meeting with us in the next couple of months. And Brighton Hove Council have been fantastic in their support. They've agreed to underwrite a shortfall that we have in the capital that's needed. So, yes, we are putting all those final arrangements in place, such as the remediation plans, as to how that crumbling reinforced concrete is going to be restored. We've recently had some trials, and those have been very successful. So when we have the permission to start meeting, that's when HLF will be looking through the final details of how the project is going to be operated, how those remediation works are going to be done, and then we will hopefully be starting work in autumn, which is amazing considering that myself and the other volunteers started this project 9 years ago when the former leaseholder announced that he wanted to turn the site into flats. It's been an incredible journey, but to think that 9 years on we are finally on the cusp of starting the restoration works to the main building, it's a huge relief. And when works begin, I think people are going to be so excited, because the project to restore the building, that the things that it's going to bring for the community but for the city as well, it's going to benefit a lot of people.
Not just the swimming pool, it'll be much, much more.
Absolutely. When Salt Lake Lido first opened in 1938, it was a visitor destination. It was deemed to be the most modern and luxurious Lido in the UK, and it had a fantastic ballroom and restaurant with the Grand Rotunda, which overlooked the pool. When the pool and the building closed during the war, it sat derelict for nearly 20 years until the council bought it from the Salt Lake Estate Company. They reopened it. They added a library and a community facility. Upstairs, they put a huge stage across the rotunda, and it became more of a community hall, which was great. It served its purpose over the years. But with the building crumbling and failing, unfortunately, the building has never been sustainable, because it's a big beast of a building. And although the reinforced concrete allowed the architect to come up with something like those unique design, that in itself now, 80 years of sea salts penetrating, it means that it's on the verge of dereliction. So when we began this project, we always said, and it was a condition of the HLF funding, that Salt Lake Lido had to become a sustainable visitor destination once again. So that means that what we can do is we can look at how the building's been used in its 80-year history, and we can tease out the best elements and uses of the whole site. So, for example, we want to make it into a destination venue again, so we're going to open up the Grand Rotunda in the ballroom, which is going to be reinstated as a ballroom. So people will be able to visit, whether it's a private party, whether it's corporate hire, whether it's a wedding venue, or whether it's a community event that we are putting on, people will be able to come along and enjoy the building and see it as it was originally designed to be, which is this really beautiful space, which is reminiscent of an ocean liner, the Queen Mary, and they'll be able to come along, whether it's a dance, whether it's an art exhibition, people will be able to use the space as it was originally designed. So it's important for us to make money from the building, because swimming pools don't make money. No swimming pool in the UK is profitable without the support of either a local council or huge membership fees. So, for example, if people go along to a local swimming pool, they may pay, £5 or £6 as an adult. In reality, the cost of their swim is so much more, which is why local councils support swimming pools with a huge subsidy. Salt Dean Lido hasn't been subsidised since 1994, and it won't be ever again. So this means that the pool, although we've got it open, it operates at a loss. So our whole business plan has been based on restoring the building in order to bring in income, which will then allow the swimming pool to continue as a swimming pool, but also the relevant parts of the Lido building can also operate as a community centre and so on.
So what about fundraising events? Because obviously money is important. You're all volunteers, nobody gets paid. So how can you raise the shortfall?
Yes, there is a shortfall to raise. The council have agreed to underwrite a large part of that, but we do need to continue fundraising, as most charities.
Events? I mean, you've got some events coming up this month in June.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that we've always been very good at is putting on community events, fundraising events. And we will be hosting Salt Dean Lido's big weekender on the 7th and 8th of June. And anyone can buy tickets. It's going to be held in a huge chandelier-lit marquee in the grounds by the iconic pool. So that means that even if it's rainy on the night, and the event is weather-protected and fantastic dance floor and stage in the marquee, we've got some great bands. So the Friday night, that's a family-friendly night. We've got a band called Press Play. They'll be playing The Beatles, The Monkees, David Bowie, Queen, Oasis, Blur, Madonna, Ed Sheeran. So they'll be there. They'll be swimming in the pool until 9 o'clock. So it's floodlit, our swimming pool. It's also heated. And there'll be a licensed bar, delicious hot food. And people can buy a ticket, but know that all the profit will be going directly to the Lido Restoration Fund. That's the Friday night. Saturday night, we've got a world-famous tribute band called ABBA's Angels, and they are really good. They tour the world. So we're lucky to have them on the Saturday evening. It's adults only for that event. But whether you're a dancing king or queen, we recommend that you come along. And again, all money raised will go towards the Lido Restoration Project. So tickets are available via our website, which is saltdeanlido.org. Or people can pop along to Salt Dean if they live in the area and buy tickets from either David Shoebridge on Lustrals or HR Hardware on Longridge Avenue. But they really are good events and we normally sell out, so book soon. 7th and 8th of June. Also, this year, we've got lots of other various events lined up. We've got cinema. So we're bringing cinema back to Salt Dean Lido. Do look out for that. I think people are going to be quite excited. And we're also going to have various pool parties. We've got a summer solstice pool party. And of course, probably our most popular events at the end of the season, when the pool is closed. I need to make that clear. So when it's closed for regular swimming, we have the doggy swim events. So our canine friends can come along with their owners as well, if they wish to bring them. And, yep, use the swimming pool. That is going to be in September. All of these details will be updated on our website very soon. At the moment, we are selling the tickets for the big weekend, 7th and 8th of June. Regarding other fundraising, we are always applying for various grants. And we're looking for people to raise money themselves. We are a registered charity now, the Salt Dean Lido Trust. So if anyone is running a marathon or has a cake sale or can come up with, you know, wants to sit in a bar full of baked beans, whatever they wish to do, if they want to help us raise money for this restoration project, then they can go to our website and look at our fundraising page. But yes, we have lots of money to raise still. We still need to raise money for the fit out of the Lido. We want it to be a beautiful Art Deco space, something which people can really cherish coming to, have a great time. Many of these buildings don't exist anymore. And when Salt Dean Lido is returned to its former glory, it will really be like stepping back in time, whether that's on board the Queen Mary or whether that's onto perhaps the step of a Poirot. detective film. We want something like it to be a magical place.
When do you think that might be in your crystal ball?
In my crystal ball, we think that we're being quite conservative, that it would be a two-year project. So on that basis, we're looking at opening in the winter, I imagine, of 2021. Perhaps we'll have a Christmas ball then. Yeah, that'd be very nice. So as well as the ballroom that we're restoring and the library, we're also creating a community wing. It's really important that Saltine Lido provides a space for the people that have historically used it, as well as new groups and members of the community. So the West Wing, which was the former changing room wing, is a huge space, but it will be cleverly designed, and we'll do that by consulting with the existing community users and other interested parties in Saltdean. It wants to be a multi-purpose functional space with soundproof walls that can open up and change the space into various shapes depending on what's needed, whether it's a Pilates class or yoga for mature citizens or arts and crafts or people with educational needs, perhaps adult evening classes or after-school homework classes. But it really has to be a multi-purpose space. So that design work is yet to be done. So as you can see, there's lots of elements to this project, lots of work to do, but it's happening. So after 9 years, finally Saltdean Lido is going to be restored. And once it's done, I'm sure that people are going to be very pleased. I know the volunteers are appreciative of all the support that we've had from the local community. But yes, it's going to be worth it in the end.
I was talking to Derek Chester about the plans to restore Saltdean Lido. The last time this young lady was in Brighton, she was captivating audiences, playing the title role in the musical Evita. She is, of course, Lucy O'Byrne, and she will be back in town this month in a new musical called Little Miss Sunshine. And when I caught up with Lucy recently, we first talked about her role in Evita.
Evita was amazing. I had a brilliant time and a lovely time in Brighton. That was my first time performing there. Yeah, we had a fantastic tour. When we finished in the UK, we went to Germany for a while. And I mean, it was wonderful. It's a gift of a role for any actress to get to play. And I had the time of my life.
I had the pleasure of seeing you at the Theatre Royal, and it was an amazing performance. How can you take on that persona night after night, performance after performance?
Oh, well, thank you very much. First of all, I'm glad you enjoyed it. For me, that show was, I don't want to say easy because I don't want to belittle it, but it was a dream. And I'd always, you know, I had played the role in college before, and I'd always wanted another go at it when I was a little bit older and knew a bit more about myself and a bit more about the world. So I had, you know, I had obviously done a lot of research on Ava and knew my character and obviously studied the score to within an inch of its life. And it's a tough journey that she goes on, because obviously it spans 15 years of her life. It goes from when she's, or 18 years of her life, from when she's 15 years old all the way up to her death. So it's quite a journey every night. But so it was tiring, but so rewarding. And we had amazing audiences on that tour that kept us going, and brilliant company that just made it so easy to go into work every day and do two shows every day and tell the story. It really was a very special experience.
Now you're coming back to Brighton in another musical, and one that I personally don't know about, Little Miss Sunshine. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure. Well, it's the European premiere of Little Miss Sunshine, so it's likely that most people won't know anything about it. I certainly didn't know anything about it when I got the call to come and audition for it. It is based on the film of Little Miss Sunshine, but it was an American film that came out with Steve Carell and Toni Collette. Gorgeous film. And it's about a family from Albuquerque whose 10-year-old daughter wants to be child beauty pageant star. She wants to be a beauty queen. And she's maybe not what you would expect of a child beauty queen. They're a very dysfunctional family, and Olive, the little girl, is her own person. So it's basically about how this family who are, you know, they're struggling, they're really financially struggling, and as I say, they're very dysfunctional. The parents are sort of on the rocks, and the grandfather is quite a character and lives with them, has been thrown out of his retirement home, and the mother's brother is spending time with them after a suicide attempt. And, you know, it's a very, like, there's a lot going on in the family. But the show centers around one weekend where they all pile into the grandfather's Volkswagen camper van and try and drive an 800-mile cross-country trip to California so that Olive can be in a beauty pageant. Though crazy things happen in this story, it's just about a family pulling together to make something work for each other.
It sounds very dark. Is it dark?
It's a dark comedy. It is very, very funny, but it's very real. It's obviously, there are dark themes in it. But it's all made light of in the way that every family does, in the way that every family sort of cope with whatever is thrown at them. And we only opened last week, and we've had brilliant audiences so far. And we had a Q&A after our show last night. Actually, we're in Ipswich at the moment, and we had a Q&A, and one of the things that people were saying was, it's so relatable, like everything that happens, even though the most bizarre things happen to this family, everything that happens, there's something in how the family just sort of washes it off and just keeps going that everybody can relate to, like whether it's something that the mother says to the son or whatever, you know, it's something that every, like there's a situation in it that everyone can recognize within their own family life. And that's lovely, because it's something that, you know, you can kind of, though these things are happening, it makes everybody able to laugh at it. So these bad things are happening to them, it makes everybody able to laugh at it. And at the end of the whole show, it all turns out for the best and the family are stronger than ever.
And it's a musical.
It is a musical. So obviously the film is not a musical. So it's one of the things that makes this production very special, is it's been turned into a musical by James Lapine and William Finn. Music by William Finn. James Lapine and William Finn are famous for, James Lapine anyway, is famous for working with Stephen Sondheim, and William Finn for several incredible scores, including like the 25th annual Spelling Bee. The music it's all original music in the show, and there isn't currently a recording, so it's a difficult one to learn, but that's another thing that makes it so special. The music is really clever and can be in places quite quirky, but a lot of it is just, it's so much fun, and then some of it is just really beautiful and sort of heartbreaking. So it really adds another dimension to it.
The music itself, how would you classify it? Where would you? I mean, it's obviously not Evita and not Les Mis either. So how does it fit?
It fits the show perfectly. It's an American road musical about a family, and the music is a character in itself in the show. It just fits perfectly and rolls the story along. It's musical theatre is what I can say about it, but obviously it's its own style, in the same way that you can't really compare anything else to Evita, or you can't really compare anything else to Les Mis, I suppose, in a way. It's its own style, and it's very much the show. It's hard to describe it any other way than that. It's a family story with uplifting tunes and like hilarious interludes for different characters, and it's a perfect fit. But it is all new, and it's new to us as well. It was all brand new to me. They basically handed me a score on paper, and we're like, okay, we'll learn this with nothing to listen to reference. So it's new for everyone, but new is good.
Something for everybody, I think. Is that a fair description?
I think so, yeah.
We're hearing from Lucy O'Byrne, who'll be appearing in Little Miss Sunshine at the Theatre Royal from Tuesday the 11th to Saturday the 15th of June. With the surge of plastic pollution currently making the headlines, I was intrigued to hear about a new beach hut totally made of the stuff that appeared on Hove Beach recently. So to find out more, I put on my sandals and ventured down onto the pebbles, where I spoke to Mick Davis from Biffa and Zoe Lenkowicz from WasteAid. And it was first Zoe who explained what it was all about.
We're here to raise awareness about the problem of plastic waste reaching the oceans from developing countries. So there's 3 billion people in the world that have never had a proper waste management system. And as a result, there's a lot of pollution coming from poorer parts of the world. So WasteAid works with partner organisations in developing countries to share waste management and recycling skills. We've just started a very exciting 3-year partnership with big waste management company Biffa, who are giving us not only financial support but also crucial technical expertise to help us deliver some really impactful projects overseas.
Back to you in a moment. Mick, where did all the plastic come from?
This was material that the school children have picked up off the beach, and they've made it into bricks by filling plastic bottles with it. So it just shows there's a problem within the UK, and that's where we have proper waste management systems. If you imagine how much worse that becomes in developing countries where they don't have those collection systems, you see the problem. And really, when you see the link of people are rightly really concerned about plastics in the oceans, and there's lots of great work to try and clean them up, that's brilliant. But we also need to stop plastics getting into the ocean. And this is what we're trying to highlight. We need systems further up in communities to actually stop that happening in the first place. So it's a permanent change.
So where does the waste come from?
So this beach hut has been built from, as Mick said, from plastic that's been found on the beach. And the thing with plastic waste is it doesn't degrade. It's not like a leaf or something like that. It's going to be around for hundreds of years. So probably quite a few pieces of plastic that this beach hut are made from are going to be at least 2 or 3 decades old. You know, people find the old Golden Wonder crisp packets and what have you, and the, you know, it's old brands that we don't tend to see so much anymore. But also, like in developing countries, I suppose part of the problem is increasing urbanisation means that people are buying more packaged food rather than growing it themselves in, you know, agrarian communities. And so that's leading to an increase in the amount of plastic waste per person around the world. And with no decent waste management systems for dealing with it, a lot of it is going to end up on our shores.
Is the problem the plastic and packaging, and is it down to the manufacturers and retailers to withdraw from that and go back to paper bags and that sort of stuff? Or is it with the consumer littering public spaces?
It's a really good question. I think it's a balance of both. I think we need to look very carefully at the types of materials that we're using for packaging, and there's always improvements that we can be making there, and to reconsider this mindless use of single-use plastic, a lot of which just isn't recyclable anyway. On the other hand, we also need comprehensive waste management systems in place, because it doesn't matter whether you're using paper or plastic or whatever, if there's no system for collecting it and managing it properly, then it's always going to cause a pollution problem. So it's a case of both behaviour change, implementing decent systems, and also looking at how we're packaging goods in the first place.
We're surrounded by not only the beach hut made of plastic, but bags of plastic, which I gather came from beach this morning.
That's right, yes. Brighton Council do a morning litter pick every day, and this is what they picked up. What have we got here? 2, 4, 6 big bags of rubbish just picked up off the beach here this morning, yeah.
So would that have been left by people, or would it have been washed in from the sea?
A bit of both. I would have thought most of this has been left by people. If we look at what's here, it doesn't seem to be very kind of weather damaged. We've got a McDonald's flurry cup, you know, there's a drinks can, some beer cans and so on. So I would say most of this has been littered by people on Brighton Beach, yeah, sadly.
What can be done with plastic? Presumably it can't be burnt, Mick, or disposed of.
It can be burnt, but the best thing to do with plastics is to recycle them. And we, as are others, are investing in plants to recycle in the UK. But there's a strong message here for government that we want plastics to be easy to recycle. We want a consistency of service and to make it easy for people to recycle. There are lots of claims on packaging which says some are widely recycled, some are part recycled, or some are yet to be adopted. And really, consumers and people need a clear system, a clear traffic light system. Green means it's easily recycled. And we think then consumers will buy, because people want to do the right thing. In our experience, people want to do the right thing. They want to try and recycle and get recycling right. They want to make a difference. And when you hear all the noise about climate change and all the kind of impact that these things have, people want to do something. And this is a way they can contribute. They can either help with WasteAid, they can do something locally with their own recycling schemes. And this is really to try and raise that awareness that as an individual, you can actually do something.
Is this all too late? Have we got this legacy of dumped plastic and other materials that we're going to hand on to future generations?
Well, that's a good question. I think, yes, there is a legacy of plastic waste polluting the world, and it's been found in the, you know, the most remote parts of the planet, which is quite depressing. But I don't think that it's too late to turn things around. And that's why, importantly, at WasteAid, we are focused on stopping plastic reaching the oceans in the first place, stemming that tide. So what we do is we work with community groups in developing countries to show them how to turn that plastic into a useful product that they can sell. So we're creating green recycling jobs and capturing ocean-bound plastic to make new products. So we're here today. We're very pleased to have Biffa's support with this, but we've been awarded UK aid match from the government, from the British government. So from today until the 31st of July, any donations from the British public will be to WasteAid will be doubled by the British government, up to £2 million.
So all is not lost.
Exactly. So we're raising money at the moment to build a plastics recycling training centre in the city of Douala in Cameroon, where we're going to be training at least 300 unemployed youths and women in the community to capture that ocean-bound plastic, stop it reaching the sea, turn it into a useful product.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I was talking there to Mick Davis from Biffa and Zoe Lenkiewicz from WasteAid. Now, as I say, it's time for something completely different. This year marks the 10th anniversary year of the Rottingdean Arts Music Festival, with a series of concerts throughout the summer and autumn. The founder of the festival is local resident Dr. Roy Wales, and our Rottingdean correspondent Chris Seymour met up with him and asked him first to tell us all about the planned events.
We start off with Brass Fusion on Sunday, June the 2nd. They're a great group, about 14 of them, and they've been coming to us for many years and present a wide variety of music. The Brighton Big Band are also well-known in swing jazz, and they're very, very popular. They're coming back on Sunday, June the 16th, 3 p.m., all the Sunday concerts, 3 p.m. And if it's wet, we go into the Village Hall. And then Polita Boogaloo, which is a Colombian group, and the leader lives actually in Rottingdean, and we're looking forward to them. They're coming later in July on the 21st. And then we have the Vox Beatles, arguably the most popular of all the concert groups we've had, the biggest audience. I think we almost had 500-600 last year. They're coming on Sunday, July the 28th, and that'll be very, very popular. A newish group to us, the Brighton Beachcombers, a jazz group featuring all kinds of jazz, on Sunday the 11th. And then we end up with a traditional jazz concert on the August bank holiday weekend, August the 25th. And that's followed at the same time by a Saturday night concert on the 26th with Evelyn Glennie, who's coming to perform in the Village Hall with a Scottish trio. She's arguably one of the best-known musicians in the country, and we're delighted to have her. And she's collaborating with HLK, and they're a jazz group, and she's, of course, a wonderful percussionist. So we're looking forward to that on Monday, August the 26th at 7:30 in the Village Hall.
Just point out that the first six concerts are free.
They are, yes. We've always made them free. We do take a collection to try and defray costs, but yes, they are free. And in the past, the parish council has supported those concerts, and we do have some sponsors, but they always cost more than we take in. And in fact, this whole season is costing about £35,000, and we'll probably lose about £5,000, which will have to come from reserves. But it is our 10th anniversary year, and so we're pushing the boat out a bit to make it a rather special year.
And then the Rottingdean Autumn Music Festival starts on September the 28th.
Yes, it's late September. It goes it's Saturday the 28th to Sunday, October the 6th, a packed week of 11 events, sometimes two events on one day. And we start off with the Gilbert Sullivan Gala Concert on the 28th in the Village Hall at 7:30 with a festival chorus, some ex-Deutschkart singers. That should be a wonderful evening. And then we've got two jazz concerts, one in the Village Hall on the Sunday, the 29th, with Ronnie Scott's All Stars, which is a fantastic lineup of some of the most talented jazz players in the country. And then we have a couple of evenings at the Bistro Gourmand, where there's sort of music and supper dinner, where the first one is jazz at the Bistro on the Monday, the 20th, September 30th, and then a classical piano recital also with supper and dinner with Mike Hatchard on the October the 1st. So that takes us through into Wednesday, back to the Village Hall with a wonderful Opera and Musicals Festival Gala Dinner with the three tenors from the Welsh National Opera on Wednesday, October the 2nd, and that's always a very popular event. And then a Shakespeare in Song and Verse on Thursday, October the 3rd, with the superb singer and actress Lucy Stevens. Ending up on the Friday, October, with two events, a chamber music, a wind quintet in the church, in St. Margaret's Church, October the 4th at 1 o'clock, and then a folk concert by a most fascinating group, Yantra, which combines music from Bulgaria, India and England, in St. Margaret's Church at 7:30, Friday, October the 4th, and that'll be by candlelight. And then we have another jazz concert on the 5th, Saturday the 5th, with the Jazz Repertory Company. We've had them now, this will be their fourth visit, they're wonderful concerts, top players, and they're performing the Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong songbook, so that'll be exciting. And the whole festival ends up on with a Classics for Pleasure concert by the English Concert Orchestra, conducted by myself, in the Village Hall on Sunday, October the 6th. Lots of popular pieces, the Queen of Sheba, Arrival of the Queen of Sheba, the Spring from the Four Seasons, an intermezzo from Cavalleria Rusticana, some items from the Messiah, and the Eine kleine Nacht music of Mozart. So a nice combination, something for everybody on that final concert.
Tickets are available from the Chapel Collectors Centre, Park Road, Rottingdean, which is just opposite the Village Hall, or you can go online at rottingdeanarts, all one word, .ticketsource, again one word, .co.uk. And that's nearly it for this edition of At Home This Morning. So until next time we meet over the airwaves, which will be in about 4 weeks' time, and before our final piece of music, there's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For more information on the Saltdean Lido project, simply go to saltdeanlido, again all one word, .org, or just go along to the Poole ticket office. For tickets to see Little Miss Sunshine at the Theatre Royal this month, you can either get tickets direct from the box office in New Road and avoid the dreaded booking fee, or go online to atgtickets.com/Brighton. To find out how you can help prevent waste plastics and other rubbish destroying the environment, simply go online to WasteAid, that's waste, W-A-S-T-E, aid, all one word, .org. And for details on how you can buy tickets for Rottingdean Music Festival, simply call in at the Chapel Collectors Centre in Park Road, Rottingdean, which is opposite the Village Hall, which itself is behind the Tesco car park opposite the White Horse pub, which is on the seafront by the traffic lights. Finally, I must again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, for all the technical operation matters. And so until we meet again over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, this is Chris English signing off as usual with... Please make yourself keep safe and warm. Bye for now.